Hello, and welcome to the Open Systems Media eCast titled Mobile App Permission Frameworks, How to Use Location and Device IDs Effectively. I'm Kurt Schwader, your moderator, with today's speakers Kevin Trilley from Trustee and Carolyn Hodge from Locade. Today's schedule consists of a 50-minute presentation period, leaving 10 minutes at the end for the Q&A. Before we begin, I'd like to run down some features of your audience console. First is the Enlarge Slides button. This button will maximize the slides to fill your entire screen. The Download Slides button will allow you to download and print the slides if you'd like a hard copy to follow along with. The button labeled Forward to a Friend enables you to send an email to someone that will include a registration link to this eCast so they can also attend. The Ask a Question text box then enables you to participate in today's event. You simply type your question into the box, submit it by using the Submit button. You can submit a question at any time during the presentation. We encourage you to do so early and often while you're looking at the material and the questions fresh in your mind. We'll address as many of these as we can during the closing Q&A. If you have a question pertaining to the eCast operation itself, you can submit those too, and one of our technicians will be happy to respond to you during the eCast. A reminder, there will also be a survey at the end of this eCast. This is an important way for you to interact with the speakers as well and the companies they represent. So we ask that you please take a minute to fill out that survey at the end of the period. Finally, this eCast will be posted online within 24 hours, and an audio-only podcast will be made available. More details on this at the end of the Q&A. Our presenters are Kevin Trilley from Trustee and Carolyn Hodge from Locade. Kevin is Vice President of Product Management for Trustee. He has over 15 years of high-tech product management and entrepreneurial experience and is an industry thought leader on online identity, reputation, and trust. Kevin previously founded AssertID, a technology company that provides identity and age verification services for social networks. Previously, Kevin spent 8 years at VeriSign, including Director of Product Management for the SSL, Authentication and Security Service Business Units. Kevin holds multiple patents and patent applications in online identity. Before joining the internet industry, Kevin held positions in the semiconductor and chemical industries as a product management, product development, and engineering and operations manager. Carolyn Hodge is the second speaker for today. She's a chief marketing officer at Locade, responsible for marketing and communication strategy, including channel and developer partnerships and community relations. Carolyn has 15 years of experience in business-to-business marketing, consumer education, and public relations. She brings a unique background in privacy and security to Locade, having run Marketing Trustee for 7 years through a period of rapid growth and brand development. During her tenure, Trustee launched a mobile privacy advisory council joined by the MMA, HP, and Verizon Wireless to introduce the first mobile privacy consumer attitude research and mobile developer privacy guidelines. Kevin will be kicking off today's presentation. Kevin, the floor is yours.
Thanks, Kurt. Good morning and good afternoon, everybody, and welcome. Today we're talking about a pretty exciting topic, I think, for many of us. We all are very familiar with the explosion of mobile and the prevalence of smartphones in all of our hands and what that means for the types of things we can do and the types of services we can interact with online. With that, there's a couple things that have arrived alongside that. In particular, there's new types of services and advertising that are using new techniques that access information that is sensitive, in particular location information and some of our personal information. To take advantage of some of these great new services, these types of accesses to these data need to be considered from a privacy perspective to make sure that all particular consumers that are involved with this feel good about what's going on and take advantage of the services. So today's webinar is really going to talk about two elements of this ecosystem. In particular, location is a great enabler to these great new services, and then, of course, the privacy discussion on how to carefully consider these issues to make sure that you are, as an app developer, doing everything correctly to flourish in this activity. So with that, a quick background on Trustee for those of you that may not be familiar with us or that have known us in the past. We've gone through a lot of changes in the company the last couple years. Formerly a nonprofit for many years, we have become a private company a few years ago and have been busily building the company into a global organization that's really focused on delivering a combination of services to help companies build privacy practices and become and demonstrate that in a transparent fashion, and also to give tools to consumers that allow them to also interact with businesses to have trust and to have choices among the use of their personal information. We're based out of San Francisco, and we have four core areas that we are involved with. We, of course, historically have been involved with helping traditional websites build privacy programs and display their transparency and privacy practices to consumers. Most recently, we've been working in the advertising industry. If any of you have seen the blue icon starting to appear in ads, that is basically a mechanism for consumers to realize they have choices around targeted advertising. We've been working in the mobile app space for about 2 years in the certification and privacy policy practices for mobile apps, and then finally in the cloud for our software as a service customer base. So with that, I'd like to turn it over to Carolyn, who's going to introduce Locate and start the first module on location services.
Thanks, Kevin. I want to thank Trustee and also the host today for inviting us here to talk about location. I'm excited to hear about all of the new things that Trustee is doing in mobile and in advertising on mobile devices. I'm going to really do the deep dive into just one area of mobile privacy and mobile privacy concern, and that's location. So the first thing I'm going to do is tell you a little bit about Locate, about some of the mobile applications that are emerging and how location is being used in them, and then give you some examples of use cases specifically in mobile advertising, which I think will tie really well into what Kevin's going to talk about in terms of mobile applications that are using advertising and location. So first off, I'd like to introduce Locate. Locate is the world's largest location as a service provider. We enable mobile application and enterprise web application developers to access the location of any mobile device in North America on all of the Tier 1 carriers. So you can reach more than 350 million devices through our gateway. And as long as they are opt-in and you have permission to reach them. We can find any type of device and on any of those Tier 1 carriers. The mobile user does not have to have an app downloaded, and they don't need to have their GPS enabled in order to do this. I think many of the people who are on the call today probably have smartphones. They may be tweeting right as we speak and tagging their location. Typically, these applications are using an onboard GPS to locate the phone and provide the location. In our case, we can enable applications both on the web and on the device. For feature phones that can use location and for smartphones as well, it's all being pulled from the carrier tower location, what's called Cell ID or AGPS. There are several advantages, which I'll get into more detail when I go through the use cases. One is that cell identification off of the cell phone towers cannot be spoofed, and this is important in fraud and risk reduction. The other is that when you're using cell identification to find the location of a phone, you're not draining the battery at all. So it has a broader reach, and it also has some end user benefits of not draining the battery. So what I wanted to just tee up a little bit is what's going on right now in mobile and how people are using location. And I think, you know, Kevin mentioned how Trustee has started to provide privacy services in location over the past 2 years. Some of the latest information that's out is that Pew Internet Research just did a survey that said that 46% of American adults now own a smartphone, which is up from 35% just a year ago. And, you know, in excess of 6% of all internet traffic is from mobile devices now. In the case of location, the SMS text messaging area is exploding. Over 200,000 text messages are sent every minute, and volume is tripling. Major brands are paving the way with these text message campaigns. Maybe many of the people here on this call are implementing text message advertising campaigns and also mobile advertising campaigns, as well as advertising that's now being delivered in applications, again, and all of these have some privacy implications. Finally, the mobile commerce space, which I just mentioned a minute ago, in mobile payments is taking off, and Forrester Research is predicting that by 2015, about $119 billion in goods and services will be purchased through mobile phones. So we've really seen an enormous amount of growth, and location enabling many of these uses is providing all kinds of new services for mobile users, but also creating some privacy and permission concerns as well. So I'd like to talk a little bit in each of these areas about how people are using location, in particular the location provided through Locade. The first one is in credit card fraud and risk reduction. As mobile payments increase, people are using their cell phones to make more mobile payments, but also we're using location with credit card issuers and seven of the top 10 banks to authenticate that the phone location is where the payment is being made. And this is helping to reduce false positives to the tune of about $400 million a year, potentially. In the family safety area, this is of interest to some of the mobile application developers who may be on the call. We have a customer, Life 360, that enables you to download an application onto a smartphone if you're a parent, and you can then opt in all of the phones that are in your family. It could be for your children. That could include feature phones, but also for potentially elderly parents who you may want to be tracking to make sure that they are where they are or you can find them. This family safety application uses location to basically track your family and make sure that they're safe. In this case, the privacy permissions are very interesting, and I encourage people to actually download this app and check it out and see how they're provided. The next area is shipment tracking. This has less of a privacy implication for those of you that are on the call, but location can be determined on devices that have chips in them, even if they're not using a cell phone number. We actually provide tracking for devices in over 165 countries, and those can be things like dumpsters or Coke machines or packages. One of the other interesting use cases is in mobile gaming. In this case, we do something called geofencing, where you can geofence the state of Nevada, as an example. And every time you are placing a wager with the Leroy's Sportsbook application, you can place it from it. We check the location of the device to make sure that you're inside the state of Nevada. And in this case, this is a highly regulated industry. And so we actually ping the phone and request location permission on every single wager. So that's a very high level of opt-in permission that we require in that particular use case. So that brings us to mobile marketing, which I'm actually going to go into a couple of more examples in depth. And I also think that sets up nicely some of the mobile privacy work that Kevin and Trustee are doing that isn't just limited to location, but all types of information that are being collected and used for mobile marketing purposes. In this case, with Locade, we provide a location-enabled, location-based marketing for brands and agencies to be able to determine the location of a cell phone and then push advertising, if it's an SMS, text message campaign, or potentially to enable mobile applications to provide or push ads based on the location of the cell phone. So one example that I have here is hyperlocal marketing for Blue Moon. And in this case, what I'd like to kind of get across here, because our topic is permission and how to use things, how to use mobile location effectively, is to show the actual process of how Blue Moon obtains the permission to use location. So in this case, it's an in-store tabletop display. Users text an opt-in to a short code. They receive a text message back that requires them to affirmatively give permission for location to be obtained. And then whenever the user is actually in a particular geofence area, and this was done on, I think, over 20 airports in North America, so whenever you would enter that airport geofence, you would get a SMS text message telling you where to find your favorite beer, Blue Moon, nearby. And we also require permission, often an ongoing opt-in reminders that are sent on a monthly basis. That totally depends on the volume of location pings that are being done, but also on the volume of messages that are being delivered. So the next example that I like to use, because I think it's very clear and it's also a multi-channel use case, is the North Face. So again, this is a proximity marketing campaign that is done for SMS text messages. The North Face set up a website specifically where their users can go in and opt in to receiving text messages that will alert them when they're near North Face stores about sales that are taking place or store events that are happening. So they actually sign up online and enter their information. They receive a text message which asks them to respond affirmatively to opt in. And then whenever they receive a message, they're given an option to opt out, which includes, you know, getting help or stopping the messages. And so I think this is a great example of how proximity marketing can be done and permission delivered in a very user-friendly way. The advantage of using carrier location for the end user is that the privacy requirements are particularly high. But I think Kevin's actually going to go into some of the details around broader types of mobile marketing in applications and how to deliver privacy in those instances. So I'd like to turn it over to Kevin.
Great. Thanks, Carolyn. Okay, so a couple comments as we slide into the privacy module here. Is I just want to make a general comment of there's been a lot of debates and discussions going on in the press and other places about some of the changing rules that may appear to some about privacy. And I don't think this is something you need to be afraid of as a developer of applications in the mobile space. It's just something you need to become educated on. And I think what's happening is this is becoming, you know, from a comparison perspective, as important as security was to the e-commerce phase when that started back in the late 90s. So the fundamental point I want to make also is that really, if done right, privacy becomes an enabler to help you and to really become more successful in your marketing and your advertising activities on your apps. So, but there are some things that are getting more complicated, and I wanted to point out a few of those things over the next couple slides that you should start to pay attention to. So fundamentally, the first thing is really around permissions, which is really what Carolyn was explaining from a couple use cases around location. I mean, from a high level, what's happening, you know, a lot of the advertising and marketing that happens on the web traditionally worked in a passive model of collecting information where users clicked and browser history and those kind of things. But in this space, it's more about directly accessing information that's on a user's phone. And to do that, you need to have permissions from the user to do it, obviously. So there's sort of three levels to this, that when you're building your app, you need to really think carefully about the type of information you're going to need. And there's always this concept of data minimization. Don't just collect everything because there might be a future use for it. Collect only what you need and you know, use it immediately. So you need to build something in that states your intent. And usually these are, you know, the Android model is pretty robust in that you create a manifest document that allows you to state different permissions for these different accesses. The second level is then the platform itself needs to enable that these permissions are exposed to a consumer so they have what's called transparency about what's going on. And there's a variation across the different platforms on how this is done. Sometimes at the point when the app is installed, the user can then see that these particular permissions are being requested or declared, and they can accept that. Traditionally, that's an all-or-nothing endeavor. I think on the BlackBerry platform is a case where you can actually select individual platforms within an application, but in most cases, it's par for the course of accepting the full use of the application. And then finally, you know, as I mentioned, the users need to do something about it. They need to look at it and understand it and really be able to make an informed decision, so that the analog on the other side would be, which is not effective, is that if it's buried in some legal document, they're just never going to get to it or read it. Or if it's, you know, too frequently being promoted to them, they might get fatigued out from different indicators. So there's always this debate about, you know, seeing it one time up front versus seeing it at runtime. And so the principal message to take away is that, you know, this needs to be very carefully done and really done with the perspective of minimizing the types of information you're going to need, as we'll talk about there, as you're looking at different monetization models for your app and incorporating third parties, this becomes a more complicated use case. Okay, so one of the things that just happened recently that's pretty important is there's been some data out there about a comparison of the app space versus the web space around just basic disclosures of privacy policies. And, you know, whether those are effective consumer tools or not is another topic, but just having that fundamental level in place so that it is in a similar position to the web space was lacking on the app space. And there were a couple reasons. One is the platforms were not enabling, you know, a common location for where a user could look at that information before downloading an app. And this blurb right here shows the recent work by the California Attorney General Kamala Harris about working with the primary platforms that host mobile apps to get this in place so that app developers can now display this privacy policy as part of the mandatory requirements of presenting their apps to the marketplace. The second step, of course, is then putting together that privacy statement, which we'll talk about in a couple slides. The other big thing that's happening is it's no secret to any of us that a lot of kids are using phones, and in particular games, in the form of apps, and this is bringing up additional concerns. In the backdrop of this 2012, the FTC has been relooking at the COPPA law, which is the Children's Online Privacy Protection Act, and taking it from over 10-year-old state into a more modernized position. As part of that, mobile apps is one of the centerpieces for where they would look at bringing together a multi-stakeholder group to really think about all the different ways that the kids will interact with this space. So as such, if you're working on these types of applications that kids may be using, you're going to get additional scrutiny in terms of how you're presenting information. I think the obvious fundamental point to all this is that when you start using location and children are involved, you have some obvious safety concerns to think about with the children and where they're at that goes way beyond the traditional marketing. And of course, the COPPA law just looks fundamentally at if you are a business and want to interact with a child under 13, you need parental permission. So there needs to be some mechanism of obtaining that permission in a different vector of permission that we're talking about today. But all this is just showing that there's a tremendous focus on this space this year, and really having your house in order is recommended because there'll be a lot of scrutiny where it hasn't been before. It was in the web space, desktop web space, over the last 2 years, really focused around advertising from a high level, and this is really looking like the next major chapter. So now shifting over to targeted advertising, this is been quite a debate. There's been a lot of work by the advertising industry to put together a transparency program that I showed with that blue icon, the Ad Choices icon. That was really created for cookie-based advertising where users are tracked based on where they go and what they click and to form profiles and then serve up relevant advertising. This particular model is a little bit more difficult to port to the mobile app space, where cookies don't really exist, and there's different mechanisms for defining profiles on people going back to accessing their personal information. And more difficult is then how do you correlate that information from one app to another. So the primary mechanism that's in place was really using a device identifier as that cookie, and there's extra privacy sensitivity to that, because unlike a cookie, you can't delete it. It's permanently associated with your phone. So one of the major platforms in the iOS platform has taken a move to deprecate what's called the UDID, Unique Device Identifier, from third-party access so that that can't be used in that fashion anymore. So this really brings up and highlights the concern for how targeted advertising is going to play out, but also that there's a need for additional privacy sensitivities around targeted advertising and mobile apps. The model I was just talking about in the web world, you can see a couple examples here of this blue icon as an example purely of how it could play out. But essentially what happens is that in advertisements that are using targeted profiles, you'll see that blue icon if you can see it. It's pretty small. By design, that's part of the problem, is that on a mobile form factor, it's really hard to see that. So how is someone, A, going to see it, understand it, and interact with it? You could do it in different areas in your app, sort of in your settings in the middle example there. But like a lot of people, they may go to that only once in a great while, if ever. And so ensuring that consumers are aware of that is not guaranteed in that model. A better best practice would be more about, as we've been talking about, if once the platforms enable for some form of privacy disclosure up front before the app's purchased, then perhaps once the app is used on the first time it's downloaded and used, there can be some presentation of their choices in the fashion I've shown there as an example, where at least they're going to be aware for the first time that they have a choice, whether they decide to do something about some other issue, but at least you're being transparent here. So all these things are being worked out from a high level. Again, a major focus of the various industry groups and technology providers like Trustee of trying to make these things work in the space so that it works complementary to the web space, because many apps also will open up browser windows within the app experience. So it's sort of a unified experience anyway in many of these things. So considering how to link the two together is pretty important. One quick note here, there's a big debate going on in the European Union, and this really applies to anyone that has a global product. The EU has a different privacy model than the US. From the EU regulator's perspective, what they're proposing here is that, as opposed to having a model where somebody can be aware of a choice that they have, and then if they decide to opt out, they can click on it and opt out, sort of post-process, meaning the profiling and targeting can occur, and then you can click to opt out at the end. The EU has a different model where they require that any sort of tracking technology that's in place requires a consumer's consent before it occurs. And so the model sort of changes back to that in the app space, having that presentation upon the first download so that the user is aware of anything that is going to happen within the app's behavior prior to it happening. So it's just something, there's still continued debate. This is a model that is ready for enforcement by the EU regulators later in May, in the second quarter of this year. But this is something you should consider as you look at a global rollout of your products. So now going back into a little bit about how a tracking and targeting system would work, there's as we have all this shifting around of different types of device identifiers, the lower right box there really shows how you'll have different methods that will coexist, especially when you start thinking about across the platform where a UDID may or may not appear by the end of the year as an eligible tracking identifier. The Android system has a whole completely different set of rules and different named identifiers. There are MAC addresses that can be used in place of device identifiers, and then even app-specific IDs that are used. The left-hand side really shows a very simplistic example of how ad networks interact with apps. They're traditionally embedded within an SDK and compiled within the app. So having services that, like the web world, that just sort of layer on top, that's a little bit more difficult. In the web world, the way it works is that there are scripts that are added to the ad tag creatives and that present that icon experience when you're interacting with device device IDs being passed back and forth. You have a little different system where you need to have some form of privacy component that sits alongside that ad network SDK to have that same type of experience. And then having the you see the upper arrows flowing through to the upper right box of having those preferences that are then shared. The DNT is a acronym for Do Not Track, just a term to represent preferences that I want to be tracked, I want to opt in or opt out, and then have that pass back and forth such that it could be shared with the ad network in various different ways. So you have a little bit more difficult architecture of a system to put in place than simply appending ad tags to existing ads and flying icons around. So this is a lot of the work that's being considered and thought through as how to make device targeting privacy safer from a high level. And there's still some work to do here. So where does this leave you going forward? A couple things we wanted to present to you in the form of resources is that the first thing you should think about is that the California law is going to be opening up a increased scrutiny on making sure you have a privacy policy. Trustee makes available a free tool for anybody that wants to create one. We have a very slick user experience where you can very simply select what types of activities your app will do, and then we create all the appropriate privacy disclosures that are created by our expert team here and constantly maintained as a web service. It will output a privacy policy, and it's formatted specifically for mobile phones and tablets so that it's very easy to read and understand, and this will be your baseline compliance. This is just a starting point, but it gets at least you going down the right path, and you can think through very carefully the components that need to go into this and ongoing ways of keeping it accurate and compliant. Things that you need to think about with that is really understanding the third parties that you deal with. As I mentioned earlier, each one of those SDKs has access to data that your app has access to. So ensuring that those vendors are very good privacy policies themselves, that you understand them, you understand how their services work very, very thoroughly. There's been a few cases over the last 12 months of a very large brands being surprised by some of the data that was flowing out. And, of course, the state of affairs today in the media is really to point those things out in a very explicit manner. So being very careful about how you choose the data that your app accesses is the first step. Only take what you need. And then thinking through how to interact with these different types of third parties and, again, sharing that information in a very careful, measured way is very critical here. And then doing this ensuring that you're monitoring the flows of data throughout your app, taking inventory of those third parties and watching the flows actually leave your app is very recommended here. So with that, we have a couple resources that both Carol and I want to make available before we go into Q&A. We have a few blogs that I wanted to point you to. Our trustee corporate blog has a mix of policy work around the things that I talked about earlier, about things to think about with what the FTC is thinking through, what the European Union is thinking through. We also have a technology blog that's more focused on technology elements. We have a couple examples from the last week or so around this mobile tracking topic and some of the issues we see from a technology perspective around mobile privacy that might be interesting to help you understand some of these things. There's a great resource from the Future of Privacy Forum around best practices. They take a lot of concepts that we talked about today and present them in a nice packaged format for how you think about implementing these things into your own application. It's really a useful resource to have to complement all these other things that we're talking about here. And then, Carolyn, you have a couple things you want to talk about?
Yeah, I include here some links to first our a demo on our website that you can do that actually is pretty slick and shows you how you can actually access location information on any network and any type of cell phone. You can locate your own phone, which has limited usability, but it does demonstrate what the API can actually return to a web service. And the other nice thing about that is that you also see in real time the privacy flows for obtaining the location. The second resource is a link to our privacy page, which has a manual on it, which is a guide for LBS, for location-based services developers, and obtaining permission. It's a pretty extensive take on using location and providing permission and location. And those are the two pieces that I recommend people take a look at.
All right. Very good. I think we're at the Q&A portion of the event now. We got some good questions. And again, I ask that the audience please feel free to ask any questions you've got with respect to the information that you heard today. Let's start with Carolyn. There was a question that came in about kind of a question about capabilities and capacity. Can you handle 6 billion devices through your gateway? Is there some information you can give them in terms of the architecture of the gateway? Like, is it distributed? Is it not? How that kind of thing works?
Sure. So I'm the CMO. I'm not the CTO, and I'm not the technical expert on this area. But our gateway works as an API, and so as a developer, you would get credentials to access the API, and we make calls through our gateway that first ping our privacy platform to ensure that the phones are opted in that you're trying to locate, and then it routes to, it determines which carrier the phone number is on, and then attempts to locate the phone via the carrier location data. So we're actually hooked into all of the carrier location sources, and then that returns a latitude longitude via the API. As far as what the actual technical, architecture of the gateway is, I'm happy to offline point you to people who can give you a much more in-depth and technical explanation of that.
Okay,
but
great,
as
thanks.
For the number of devices is basically the number of devices that are going to be connected through those carriers that we're accessing. So any device that's connected and connects to a cell phone tower via one of these carriers would be locatable through our API.
Okay, very good. Kevin, there was a slide that you had in terms of the in-ad or in-app or first-use options where you get the little pop-up on your cell phone that asks you about the privacy. That can be scary from a user level in terms of any time you see that little pop-up and say, hey, are you sure you want to do this? The first thing that jumps through your mind is this a virus? What am I downloading? How can, and maybe this is for Carolyn too, how can you raise user awareness so that they understand what the pop-up is as just a normal course of life and what its implications are if they click yes?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I'm going to talk about this in a U.S. context only because, as I mentioned, the EU may require something like that. So let's keep that aside for a minute because the question's really good. There's a couple elements to that. One is the concept of what this is trying to promote is fairly new. I think historically privacy has been managed through browser settings, with cookie deletion and management, which, admittedly very few people did, and it was pretty technical and people didn't really understand it. As it starts to move to a user experience like this, you're now starting to expect users to begin to understand what this is and make a decision, and that decision really varies by the cross-section of the globe that uses the web. Some people are very privacy-sensitive. Some people are very transparent, and there's a lot of people in the middle that have, shades of gray. So there's a couple points that need to be made. One is the platforms definitely will play some key role here, the platforms meaning Google, Apple, RIM. There's different things that can be presented in the fashion of a pop-up, and there's different things that can be presented in the fashion of an icon at real time. And I think about the iOS location icon or, pop-ups that say your location's about to be used. I think people are starting to feel, and I as a user, I'll give my opinion, start to feel good that those things happen and that you're aware that if you start to use a map program that your location is going to be used.
Right.
If that starts to happen too much, then I think there'll be a fatigue problem where people will start to be annoyed by them and start to maybe ignore them or disable them or whatever, and then the system sort of blows up.
Right.
So I think there's a balancing act there at the platform level that we need to think through. From an industry perspective, meaning the advertising industry, the analytics industry, the privacy industry, there's an education campaign that needs to happen. And the advertising industry is doing a great one this year, which is a consumer education promotion around what that blue triangle in particular means so that people can start to understand what choices really mean. So that's new, admittedly, and a lot of people don't know what that system is, but this is a system that will be around for a long time, and it's just beginning, and more people will become aware of that.
Exactly.
So that's sort of a different level that I don't think it's a scary thing. Frankly, I think it's a new thing, and then people, we just need to manage how often it's being presented and in what how it's being educated at the same point. I think it will settle out to a nice medium over time.
Okay. Great. Carolyn, how accurate is the GPS information when you're using cell towers? Do you have any information on when you get those kinds of GPS locations? Is it accurate to within 10 feet, a mile?
Sure. So GPS is the most accurate way of obtaining the location. And again, the GPS is obtaining location from the satellites. There's 24 satellites in orbit over the Earth. And the GPS unit is actually taking the signal from the satellites to determine what the location of the device is. And so the GPS location can be limited if the line of sight is not good, which degrades the accuracy indoors or in urban canyons. For cell tower identification, it depends on the density of the cell towers. So in rural areas, it could be, thousands of meters or miles, half a mile or whatever. In urban areas, you're going to get a much better location, and you'll be able to actually get location in cities and also indoors. So it really depends on what the use case is for the type of location that you're trying to provide and what the purpose is for. In some of the fraud cases, the anti-fraud cases that we're describing, it's good enough to be to understand that the phone is in the same location, at a zip level or even a city block level as a card that's being presented at an ATM or at a store. In other use cases, say maybe the family tracking application to make sure you know where your kids are, or you're trying to locate your elderly parent with dementia, you want it to be able to locate at a much more accurate level. And I think if you take a look at our website and our demo, actually, you can see the different types and the different accuracies. And all of this is dependent on the carrier as well and the type of phone that you're using. So there's a lot of variability. GPS at the end is the most accurate, but it depends on your use case.
Okay. Great. Kevin, there seems to be a lot of changing rules here and things to think about and new things being introduced. How should, and I guess there's a number of perspectives here, how should this uncertainty be handled if you're an application developer or if you're an advertiser or even if you're a user?
Yes, I will agree with that. The goalposts seem to be moving quite a bit. And really that's the technology frontier that's both creating new opportunities but also opening up issues. And so if I had to give some advice, I'd think about three things. One is that this is something, privacy, this topic, is something you need to think about early on. So don't wait till version 2 to think about this, or don't put this off as something down the road you'll look at. Think about it early in your design and have your engineers not be the ones totally responsible for this, have a different perspective from, an operations product, legal perspective as part of that design. The second I would say is just really think through carefully what you really need from the user. Don't collect data with we'll figure out how to monetize it later or we'll do something with it down the road. Really only capture what you need at a given moment, because the toothpaste is out of the tube once you have it, right? It's kind of down the path, and it opens you up to bigger issues. And then I think the third is really be over-transparent. The days of hiding behind a corporate alias or hiding behind an app The more transparent you can be, the better off you're going to be. I think what's happening that you just need to always be considerate of is that there is a demand for controversy to some degree in privacy, and even your best intentions could be misinterpreted, and sometimes even cases slanted that can really come back and hit you. And a lot of times these are just honest mistakes that are being made, but I think by being transparent, you can at least alleviate that and fix the problem quickly and move onward. If you don't, people will construe it to be something else. So I think I would say those three principles, you'll be okay as much as you can as we all sort of work through this together.
All right, that makes sense. Good advice. Carolyn, do the location services also work with Wi-Fi, not using cellular carriers?
At the moment, we do not offer Wi-Fi location, but our platform is scalable and designed for us to be able to, really over the course of the rest of the year, we want to become the one-stop shop for all the different types of location that are available, and you'll be hearing more about that coming soon. At the moment, it's not a Wi-Fi access point location.
Okay, I see. Kevin, this is kind of a related question. We're talking a lot about the nuts and bolts technology underneath here for geolocation, right? And that has the possibility to be quite intrusive in terms of, over-aggressive advertising or maybe even hackers setting up and using these kinds of things. Is there anything that that protects the phone or the mobile device so that things like that can't or won't be pushed to the devices without permission or authentication?
Yeah, I think maybe Carolyn can offer a little bit better there, but I think you start to think about the ecosystem of the different components. So, Locate is a great intermediary for those kind of things, and I think it really comes down to, as much as I've talked about sort of the application level up, there's a similar set of infrastructure for permissions that need to happen from the application down. I know there's varying things that have happened that have highlighted some of this concern, but I think it's just a similar set of principles that I just explained that need to happen for the service providers that are dealing with that. Again, there's a platform level with Google and Apple and the others, and then there's also the providers of the service like Locate. And I think, Carolyn, maybe you want to extend on that a little bit further, but the infrastructure Locate has been showing is really starts to take some of these principles in place.
Just from the services that we provide to businesses to be able to locate cell phones, there's strict requirements that there has to be a demonstrated opt-in permission, and that's required by Locate and by the carriers themselves. So any company, whether it's a credit card company or an app developer like Life360, they have to be able to demonstrate that they've obtained permission. And it's very similar to what has evolved in the internet advertising and internet, data collection area. But in our case, one of the advantages I like to think of in carrier location is that it is very strict, we are very strict about the requirements around the permission in order to obtain a location fix on somebody's cell phone through the carrier network. And GPS doesn't necessarily have the same level of requirements, and that's why we need to have consumers, demanding and looking for the types of icons and, privacy policies and, becoming familiar and educated about how the settings work on their phones, through the efforts of organizations like Trustee.
I see. Okay, great. I guess another related question in terms of cell and Wi-Fi. Kevin, they're asking, do you see a move from cellular to Wi-Fi because of the issues with LTE capacity, or do you think that's not an issue at this point?
Well, I think there's balancing. There's use cases that are best served across both. I think there's great providers on both sides of those scenarios. I don't think that's the primary issue that would shift from one to other. And again, I think Carolyn gives the better market perspective on that. But from a pure privacy perspective, I mean, I don't think that's necessarily the case right now, in my opinion.
I see. Carolyn? You mentioned something about you don't support Wi-Fi, but are you seeing more people asking about Wi-Fi versus cellular?
Well, I look at it more as in, you know, as I mentioned before, we would like to be able to provide all types of location, opt-in, permission-based location to legitimate mobile application and web application developers. So Wi-Fi is just one other way to determine where the location of the phone is, and that can be useful in cases of marketing where maybe you're in a store environment and you want anybody who's connected to a device in the store to be able to, you know, I think there are uses, you know, where retailers want to provide information, you know, row by row in a store about where certain items are or where, you know, there are sale items that are located. And so that might be a Wi-Fi use case. For our purposes, location is, you know, location is location. You can provide it in any, you know, whether it's from a Wi-Fi access point, a cell tower, a GPS fix on a phone, you know, a near field, any of those are providing a location. And in the context of what we're talking about today, I think the most important thing is determining whether the location type that you're looking for is providing the accuracy and the features that you need for your application, and then also that you're providing the right, you know, opt-in permissions for consumers so that we can all make sure that we can continue to provide really cool, you know, next generation applications on mobile, on all types of mobile devices going forward.
Here's an interesting question. Is there any thinking about the management, storage, and secure deletion of acquired data? If an opted-in customer chooses to opt out, how can that user be sure that the earlier acquired data is deleted? Or have there been any thoughts in terms of that?
Yeah, this is a really good question. So the high level is, I think there's still debate on what it means to do not track. So if I say I don't want to be tracked or I want to opt out, you know, there's some simple things that say you can't use past profile data gathered on me. And I think the way the question was written is about whether the user opted in and then opted out. Even if the user didn't explicitly opt in, if they just opted out at some point, the primary, you know, expectation of the user is you're not going to use my profile. I think there's some debate on whether that data is required to be deleted. So I don't think that is even at the compliance level yet. Now, having the system in place, which is what this question is asking, I think is a great question. And really, I think it's an area for innovation that can exist, both on how that data is stored. It sort of brings in a rights management set of thinking around how my data is stored when it's being used.
Right.
Trustees actually got some R&D work going on in this space about different systems that can embed permissions around data. But the question then becomes, how is that enforced at the platform level is really what I see the question asking. I think it's an area for great innovation to exist, and I'd welcome being part of any discussion like that personally.
Okay. Yeah, it is interesting. Carolyn, there's a question about a clarification on a comment you made about providing location services for 7 of the top 10 credit card issuers. Can you clarify on that comment?
Sure. We are in pilot and testing with top card issuers, and I think it's actually 3 of the top card issuers and 7 of the top 10 banks right now. I think that this location and for fraud and risk reduction, either in mobile payments in credit card risk, you're going to see some of this coming online very soon, and it's going to be one of the an area of growth in this year for us, a major area of growth. And there's some really good, which I'm happy to forward at a later there's some good research, I think, from Gartner and so forth with some of the banks and the card issuers talking about, you know, what they're going to be doing to location enable risk and fraud services.
Okay. Kevin, if the privacy policy is ever updated, is it mandatory by law that the user is prompted to acknowledge and approve this new policy? If the user does not approve the new policy, then what are the consequences for the application and the system?
Yeah, I think the first concept to think about in this space is a term called material change. So you have to do this process if you have something significant within the policy that changes that might adversely affect the user's either understanding or expectations of what the service would do. So if you're suddenly collecting more information than what you had previously required or asked for permission on, then of course you'd have to go back and ensure that your users were aware of that. So, you know, I think we've seen a couple examples just even outside the app space around when Facebook went through this process, and then just most recently, the last couple weeks, Google doing this, where they went way out of their way to make sure that users were able to be aware of this, number one, and, offer some confirmation that they at least looked at it. So I think those are best practices in terms of how that's done. It always comes back to, you know, what the average user is going to do in terms of reading through that. So I think the other principle I would suggest is that, you know, creating something that's very specific to what the change is and making that as easily understood so that the consumer can view it and look at it. Because I think the question's really coming down to is if they did not approve it, that somehow goes back into the consent of using the app. I mean, it goes back to the permission of what you're asking for. And again, most apps today, based on the platform, require the selection of permissions of data as part of the use of the app. So if you don't like the permissions, your only choice is not to use the app. So a similar construct would be here is that if you started to change those, it's sort of, at least as the way it's designed today, outside of the RIM BlackBerry platform, is that it sort of goes hand in hand with using the app. So those would be my comments on that.
Okay, good. Carolyn, do you provide a single advertising location service, or are you an aggregator of a number of different services that can be offered to an application?
So I'm going to kind of reinterpret that, I guess. We simply provide location on cell phone, of a cell phone number, and also we can associate that location with a demographic or with an area and we can also provide a geofence. So you can set up a geofenced area and schedule location fixes on a set of telephone numbers, of mobile phone numbers. And our platform also provides the ability to manage the privacy opt-in and opt-out of that particular cell phone number. We're not providing advertising services, so we're not creating ads. We work with ad agencies and ad platforms that are out there to, in the case of the North Face, that's a shop alert platform. We also work with Hip Cricket and a couple of other agencies to provide. We do the back end location work. We do some of the geofencing, and we do the privacy permissioning for agencies that are building platforms to serve ads. And that can also be enabling mobile applications and ad serving in mobile applications.
Unfortunately, that's brought us to the end of the Q&A, and there are some other questions. I encourage the individuals to go ahead and email Kevin or Carolyn directly with those, or they will get back to you with those answers. Thanks a lot for attending. It brings us to the conclusion of today's eCast presented by Linux New Media and Open Systems Media. Thanks a lot to our presenters for sharing their insights on mobile app permission frameworks. And we and the presenters want to thank you for attending and want to remind you that there is a closing survey, so please, it's important that you fill that out for the help of our presenters today. This eCast will be posted online at a URL shown on your screen within 24 hours, and audio-only podcasts will also be made available. You can do a web search with the keywords embedded space e-cast and find all of Open Systems Media eCasts available for download as MP3s. Thanks for attending today, and have a great day.